This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 7:17, you're listening to the Evening Edition with Kelvin, Iman and Cam. So you guys may have been wondering where Lynn has been. She's actually more or less abandoned us to go on a reporting tour in the United States. Over there, she's been speaking to people from the State Department, agencies and think tanks about the US strategy for our region, also known as the Indo-Pacific strategy.
Yeah, the Indo-Pacific region is a large area. It's basically the region between the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean, and it includes Malaysia and Southeast Asia as well. So America's Indo-Pacific strategy, they look at three areas, which is security, economics and governance. So the conversations that Lynn has had so far have been mostly related to these areas. Things like how foreign policy affects investor climate, transparency and governance in the Indo-Pacific.
So she's been traveling through Washington and Washington to California, which is where we find her right now. And here she is with us on the phone. Hi, Lynn. How goes it?
Hello, you guys. I miss you. It's going well, although I am in the process of going through about three separate time zones in 10 days, which is an interesting process. It's 4 a.m. where I am in Sacramento calling you, and I'm nursing a sore throat. So this is how much I love you.
Well, thank you, Lynn. So you've been out there meeting people. Anything particularly interesting happening there?
So actually, yes. I mean, a lot of it has focused on U.S. relations with each of our individual countries. But obviously, there's also been a pretty big focus on the U.S.-China trade war. And I'll be reporting on that when I get back. But last Friday, I was part of a briefing with Gloria Steele, Acting Assistant Administrator for USAID, which is an international development agency. They work pretty closely with the State Department. And they partner with developing countries while also furthering America's interests. That's what it says on the tin. And to be honest, I wasn't super familiar with the work that USAID did. I'm not sure about you guys, but I have been traveling in a group with journalists from Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, and Indonesia. And of the lot, we're the only country that they don't have a presence in. In fact, two of my colleagues started their questions similarly. Here's one example.
Say from Vientiane, Laos, yeah. Ask is, yeah, USAID.
USAID.
Yeah, it's really famous in Laos.
Oh,
yeah.
That's good to
I think
hear.
Because when I start working in 2000, I already found that USAID already working in Laos, especially in health sector.
Right. So did Gloria talk about why USAID doesn't have representation in Malaysia?
Yep, she did. And essentially, it's because we don't need it in the same capacity.
I think it starts with the need. And I think that if you look at Malaysia's GDP per capita, it far exceeds. It's already self-reliant. And so it starts with the need, really.
Having said that, some of the things that she talked about are things that we face in Malaysia too. For example, she started off by talking about the importance of transparency and accountability and free speech when it comes to facilitating stronger economic growth, which are themes that have come up with numerous experts and reps that we've met on the tour. I did, however, want to focus on a few things in particular, specifically funding and procurement, both of which are kind of crucial puzzle pieces.
Right now, there is a big gap on infrastructure investments in the Indo-Pacific region because there is the playing field is not level, the rules are not attractive, etc. So we work with countries to do that. We work with countries to make the procurement systems transparent and solicited rather than procuring under the table or focusing on their favorite source of services, etc. Make it competitive. Make it a competitive, transparent, and fair procurement systems.
Well, I think we've seen enough to say that procurement and tenders have always been a rather fraught issue here in Malaysia. Did she have anything to say about that?
Yeah, exactly. And she did, because I asked her specifically about how this might be a problem in Southeast Asia, where procurement has been done a certain way for a long time and everyone involved is used to a very specific, often more informal, perhaps more corrupt system, and transparency is a relatively new priority. So I wanted to know how to go about making this change and what the best practices would actually look like in this instance. This is what Gloria had to say.
There are two, it's supply and demand. There are two ways by which we do this. One is by working with civil society for them to demand transparency. You know, people need to know that it is their right to know what is being procured. And so there is that. And then the other is working with the government and helping them to see what the benefits are of a solicited proposal as opposed to an unsolicited, under-the-table kind of procurement, how they will get the best value, how they will be able to, you know, how they will get the best value and that it is, at the end of the day, quicker. The bottom line here, actually, is civic education and helping populations to understand, everyone to understand how important it is to be transparent. I mean, you know, dealing with the issues of corruption, because I think that's what, you know, one of the issues that we have, we see in procurement. That's why you asked the question,
yeah.
and that's why we have a focus on it, is people think about just themselves and not the country as a whole. And civic education helps people understand everybody is responsible for everyone, and that everyone has rights. And so you start from day one, you know, children in school, to then the older generation of, you know, the civil society demanding it, and then to the government itself, feeling a responsibility towards the citizen, being more citizen responsive. It seems idealistic, but, you know, it happens. You can make it happen. And, you know, one of them, very interesting ways of making populations demand transparency is through taxation. When people pay taxes, then they demand to know what happened to the money they paid.
Yeah.
When you don't have a stake in it, you don't pay taxes, what do you care, right? But when your money is reduced by the amount of taxes you pay. And so that's the other thing we work on, is more efficient tax administration, because then everybody will feel like, that's my money. What did you do with it? So you get at it from different perspectives.
If you're just tuning in, that was Gloria Steele, Acting Assistant Administrator for USAID, an international development agency, speaking to Lee Chui Lin, who's speaking with us from Sacramento. So, Lin, what else did you guys talk about?
Well, Gloria was pretty firm that the focus on the relationship between USAID and countries is as partners, not as donor and recipient. And just to give you an idea of the kind of budget that they're working with, the financial year 2020 president's budget request for the State Department and USAID is actually $40 billion. And that includes $19.2 billion in assistance that USAID would fully or partially manage. Now, that's obviously like a ton of money. So I wanted to know, when we talk about partnerships, specifically financial partnerships, what kind of work is being done to ensure that there isn't a misallocation of funds?
For us in Asia, I'll only talk about Asia, we do not give the money to the government. What we do is, if we have a program with Voice of America, we would give it to Voice of America. If we have a program with X group, an education group, we give the money to the education group. And then we monitor and audit them very closely, because the money is for the people, really not for them. They are our partners in implementing. And so, you know, when I was in the Philippines, I was as mission director, the secretary responsible for the department on budget specifically asked me not to give the money to them, because their processes are much, much longer. It takes a long time to get them implemented. And then, of course, there's the accountability issue. And so he said, we don't want you to give your money to us. What we want is to be able to work with you. And it's faster when you give it to the implementer rather than to us.
And finally, she also spoke about how for USAID, the focus is now on developing capacity for their partners to achieve self-reliance, which is a pretty big change from the past when they were very set on eliminating or alleviating poverty. That was sort of the main goal. So in a sense, this allows the country to decide for themselves what their priorities are, how they want to tackle it. I asked her about how this shift in strategy came about, especially since there are so many ongoing conversations about what's the best way to focus aid. And here's what she said.
I just want to make sure that I'm clear that the shift in focus doesn't mean we don't value the importance of eliminating poverty. It just says, we cannot eliminate your poverty. You're going to have to do it yourself. And we will help you be able to do that. And so it is a different attitude, philosophy, because I think that for us to say, we will eliminate your poverty, is really not a very truthful statement. We have poverty here in the United States. You know, we cannot eliminate poverty in its entirety, and so there is really no good strategy towards it. But however, if you talk about helping a country become more self-reliant, then you can have a strategy. So we have, again, our administrator has started a metric system. We have country roadmaps where for every country where we work, there is an analysis, public data available, on where they are on different indicators that either show commitment or capacity. And so where they are lagging behind, that's where we work. And that's what constitutes for us the strategy. So we work, we look at where the country is in its journey to self-reliance by looking at this roadmap for every country and looking at where they are falling behind. And that's where we focus our resources.
That was Gloria Steele, Acting Assistant Administrator for USAID, and Lee Tre Lin on the phone with us, calling all the way from the US. Thanks so much for Lin.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. Sort of strange position. I'll be back in touch soon if anything else comes up. Bye.
Bye. And we have the 7:30 p.m. news coming up. You're listening to the Evening Edition.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.